item 10, Lake Tahoe total maximum daily load program update. Ms. Mandy.
I'd like to ask Mr. Larson to come. He's going to, as you heard from Richard Booth, give us an overview of one of the specific tables. It has been taking a little more work and more public interest, and I would argue a lot more money. So, Mr. Larson, over to you.
Good morning, Chair Cox, members of the board. My name is Bob Larson. I'm a senior environmental scientist here with the Lahontan Water Board. I'm charged with implementing the Lake Tahoe TMDL and generally manage most of our Tahoe policy issues here. I have about 23 slides to give you today. I'm happy to talk at you. I've done it before. I can do it again. I would like to offer the opportunity, however, for this to be more of an informal discussion. Don't hesitate to interrupt me. Ask me questions. Ask me for more information. This presentation, after all, is for you, and the more I can give you, the better. So, again, if there's something you want to know some more about, don't hesitate to ask. One more quick housekeeping item. I changed the slide on you just to make it a little bit confusing. I think slide 5 is now slide 2. So it'll be over fast. It won't hopefully get in your way too much. So I'll start with that, which is the number of questions that we had to ask ourselves as we developed the layout of the PNDL. Recall that the Lake Tahoe TMDL was developed to address Lake Tahoe deep water transparency laws. And again, these questions are the questions that we initially had to tackle when we developed the Lake Tahoe TMDL. The first one is reasonably obvious. So what pollutants are causing Lake Tahoe's clarity loss? We can't do much about Lake Tahoe's clarity until we know what's causing the problem. While this seems to be pretty fundamental, if you asked me, or you asked anybody pre-TMDL, they would have told you, probably with some confidence, that Lake Tahoe was losing transparency due to floating algae. That we had good primary productivity data showing the primary productivity and algae was going up and the clarity was going down and made good sense. What the TMDL showed us is that it wasn't just the algae. It's not just the nitrogen and phosphorus that feed the algae, but there are also inorganic sediment particles floating in solution and that are affecting Lake Tahoe's transparency. Not only are they affecting Lake Tahoe's transparency, but they're affecting it in a disproportionate fashion. At any given time, more than 2/3 of the clarity condition is driven by the amount of those fine sediment particles in suspension. So, Rich talked a lot about sediment. Sediment's a big problem in our region. Sediment is a problem throughout the state and throughout the nation. In Lake Tahoe, we have our own unique brand of sediment. We're mostly concerned, again, at this very, very fine fraction of the sediment. If you were to pluck a hair out of your head, it's about a third of that diameter. So it's really fine stuff. And this was a bit of a big deal for Lake Tahoe. So checking that box right away, we now have a good sense of what the pollutants are causing, what pollutants are causing that transparency loss. The next question we ask ourselves and the next question of the TMDL program essentially mandates is trying to figure out how much of those pollutants are reaching the lake and where are they coming from. Again, I've talked a lot about this in the past, and I can dive into any number of details that you like. The short answer is that most of the fine sediment particles in particular reaching the lake are coming from the developed area. This isn't a surprise. This is actually a good verification of what we all suspected. Tahoe's transparency was probably doing pretty well before we all built a bunch of roads and shopping malls and houses. So the analysis did show again that the urban environment is contributing that pollutant. The bulk of that pollutant is affecting the transparency loss.
So just for clarification, what is the size of the particle? Is it 210 PM210?
Great question. Less than 16 microns in size. So you're looking at PM10ish.
Okay.
It's actually I'm sorry. Did you want to say something? You just talking. You again. PM10, essentially, at 10 microns. If you look at the data, less than 8 microns is really what affects the transparency measurement. The way that we measure fine sediment particles in suspension, they do bends, essentially. And so the bend of 16 microns and less is going to make a lot of sense. Again, I want to stress nitrogen and phosphorus, still pollutants of concern and still driving it. Most of the phosphorus is also coming from the urban area. Other major pollutant sources include atmospheric deposition. Atmospheric deposition is the second largest source of fine sediment particles and contributes about 15% of the fine sediment particles reaching the lake. It is overwhelmingly the primary source of nitrogen. And this most of that nitrogen is coming from in-basin sources, but as most of you probably know, global nitrogen is also increasing, so nitrogen in the atmosphere is an issue all the way around. Atmospheric deposition, urban areas, non-urban areas. About 85 to 90% of the Lake Tahoe Basin is undeveloped. And a lot of that is managed by the U.S. Forest Service, some of the state parks, but the undeveloped area does contribute some portion of the pollutants, and there are some disturbed areas there, and we'll talk some more about that. And then the last pollutant source that we identified is stream channel erosion. erosion from the stream bed and banks itself is causing a portion of that. A relatively small piece we found with respect to the fine sediment particles, but again, we were able to check that box and have a good sense of where the pollutants are coming from. The state of California requires us to do an implementation plan, and so we had to come up with some idea of what we were going to do to reduce the pollutants reaching Lake Tahoe. We came up with a pretty detailed and, as Ms. Cunningham mentioned, a rather expensive project, looking at the opportunities for reducing fine sediment particles. We gathered regional, local, and sometimes national experts in the field, coordinated with our implementation partners, got everybody in a room. What can we do within the urban area to reduce fine sediment particles? What can we do with forests, atmosphere, streams? Start to get a sense of, again, what those options are. And ultimately, those options led us to develop the TMDL implementation plan. So it's a compilation of all the feedback from folks who actually have to do the work, as well as the scientists and experts who have a good understanding of what those opportunities might be. So this board ultimately approved the Lake Tahoe TMDL in November of 2010. You know, I've given this talk a number of different times about the Lake Tahoe TMDL. We call it the 10-10-10 talk. It was 10 years, $10 million in 10 minutes. It took a long time to do the Lake Tahoe TMDL, and just took a lot of money again, as Patty indicated. But ultimately, we reached that goal in 2010. The U.S. EPA approved the TMDL at its at the federal summit in 2011, and that basically kicked off the TMDL implementation. We adopted documents thereafter. Not surprising, based on what we just talked about with respect to the urban environment, the implementation plan does focus on urban runoff discharges. Not only did we identify it as the primary source of pollutants, but we also found that there were the most opportunities to reduce pollutants within the urban. As Rich mentioned, you know, we generally try to seek a 20-year target or a 20-year implementation plan. 20 years is consistent with a lot of our planning horizons, whether it's a general plan or a regional plan or these things. 20 years makes a lot of sense. When we started looking at the TMDL, we knew it was going to take a long time. It became very evident that it was going to take a lot of effort and a lot of resources and a lot of dedicated responsibility to achieve that target, and we wanted to come up with an interim target that was consistent with the other plans that we have on the book. So we came up with a 20-year target. That 20-year target is known as the Clarity Challenge. And the Clarity Challenge is essentially to halt transparency decline and start the restoration. And the scientists tell us that if we achieve about 80 feet of clarity for a period of about 5 years to account for natural variability, then we can say that we can reach that point. We've got to reduce fine sediment particles by about a third to get there. And that's my goal for my career. 20 years of fits nicely for me at this point. So if we can get to that point in 3 weeks, that would be great. But we won't be done. You know, we have mapped out a 65-year implementation plan that does ultimately achieve the clarity standard of 100 feet of clarity for Lake Tahoe. But again, it's going to take some time. It's going to take some considerable effort. So again, that restoration plan is pretty long. This slide emphasizes that point, right? This is, again, just a fine sediment particles there on the y-axis, time in years. It's going to take that 65 years. You'll see that first C part of the curve, right? That's the first implementation plan. We actually want to achieve about half of what we got to get done in that first 20-year period, because there's some low-hanging fruit, there's some things we know that we can do. Again, that opportunity analysis showed us really well that there are things that we can accomplish in that initial target, the things we can do to accomplish that initial target. But after that, the curve flattens out a little bit, things get a little bit more challenging, and I want to stress the point that we are just getting started. Okay? We're about 4 years into a 65-year implementation period. We have a long way to go. There's a lot of folks who ask us, where are we with the TMDL? Things are looking good. Clarity's great this year. TMDL's working. Yes, all that sounds great, but the reality, we are just getting started. We have a lot to do, and we have a long way to go with the TMDL implementation. And that leads us to the next question, which is really going to be the thrust of my presentation today, which is, how do we know that we're getting there? How do we know that we're achieving the load reductions that we said we wanted to achieve? How do we track and account for the load reductions that we mapped out, again, consistent with what Richard's been talking about, the accountability and transparency? How are we going to be able to demonstrate that the plan is working? That question has led us, over time, to the development of what we call the Lake Tahoe TMDL Management System. The Lake Tahoe TMDL Management System is, in essence, an adaptive management program for the Lake Tahoe TMDL. This is something that was envisioned, frankly, before the TMDL was adopted. We always knew that we needed a program to help us, help guide our actions into the future, and with the help of some public funds and some consultant support and a whole lot of stakeholder feedback, we've been working to develop that, and I'm happy to say that last year we completed the first cycle of the Lake Tahoe TMDL management system, and we'll be doing this every year. The TMDL management system is made up roughly of about 5 parts, and I'm going to talk more about these parts today, but the first part I've made there is tracking and reporting progress. Pretty straightforward, right? We need a process to be able to demonstrate what happened, or what's been done in the last year. These last two pieces I'll lump together, synthesize findings and recommend adjustments. What are the monitoring data telling us? What are the new science telling us? What's happening with climate change? What's happening with our implementation partners? What are we hearing with respect to the program that might lead us to the conclusion that we need to change the program? And so there's an element there, again, of synthesizing those findings and what's leading to the recommendations. And then those recommendations, of course, they need to be adopted, they need to be approved, and otherwise codified not just by this board or the executive, but also by our friends in Nevada. This is a bi-state TMDL, and we work closely with our Nevada partners on that effort. So again, that last sort of piece of that cycle is to adopt and implement those programs. Overlaying all of this is engaging stakeholders. Right? This entire process is driven by stakeholders. It's driven by our implementation partners. It's driven by public hearings. It's driven by an opportunity for us to get feedback from all the affected parties. I failed to mention it when developing the TMDL, but we didn't do any of that in a vacuum. I can't count the number of meetings that we held for developing the Lake Tahoe TMDL. One-on-one sessions with the League of State Lake Tahoe. One-on-one sessions with interested parties to explain rather complicated science. We did our best to make sure in developing the TMDL that we got as much feedback as we could, and we want to make sure that those people, and again the people who have to do the work, are engaged in the process for managing into the future. Any questions? Remember, I told you to interrupt me. So the first piece of that puzzle, right, is performance reporting, demonstrating progress. I've got a copy here. This is also on our website. I'm happy to send you a copy, but we have copies of this at your leisure. This first Lake Tahoe TMDL performance report was issued in September of last year, and this actually dates back to 2004, so between 2004 and 2013. I can go into a bunch of detail, but 2004 is the baseline year for the TMDL, and that was in essence when we had to cut off our analysis. So 2004 represents the baseline, and through this performance report we were able to document progress as to what's happened from 2004 to 2013. So it's a big initial push. The objectives of the performance report, pretty straightforward, right? As I mentioned, we want to be able to demonstrate progress, and most importantly, we want to be able to demonstrate progress in a manner that is using consistent metrics. That is a way that people understand, that is linked to other programs in the basin, as well as directly linked back to our implementation plan. Are we doing what we said we were going to be doing? And all of this, of course, is linked to that the desire to increase the transparency of who's doing what. Who's succeeding, who's not succeeding, and a little bit of court of public opinion in some instances, right, in terms of who's actually getting the job done, and demonstrate the accountability for those who have a responsibility to get work done. We'll be doing this every year. My counterpart in Nevada and I are actually just initiating the process to develop the next TMDL performance report. We'll be doing this annually in April. The performance reports, they're not going to look like this. I will stress that this is a consultant-delivered product, and they did a really nice job for us. Jason Kushnicki in Nevada and I manage this program. We'll be gathering information and providing it out. It probably won't be as glossy. It probably won't be as pretty. But at the same time, we will be accomplishing these goals. The TMDL performance report is essentially broken up into two sections. The first is urban upland accomplishments. As I indicated, the TMDL implementation plan, a lot of the work that we've been doing in the last few years is focused on moving the urban implementation forward, making sure that we're accomplishing those goals. I've talked a lot in the past about the Lake Clarity Crediting Program. We developed the crediting program as a compliance tracking tool. We have permits on our local government partners and Caltrans on the California side that implement the crediting program that require them to achieve the load reductions laid out in the TMDL. The crediting program is our compliance tool for tracking that progress. Last time I talked to this board, I talked about the need for us to amend some of those tools to create greater efficiencies, avoid some redundancies, and kind of overall deal with some of the administrative burden that had been identified. So the short story is we're just wrapping that up. The crediting program is just getting off the ground. We're going to start registering attachments probably in the next coming months. The revised tools have just been released in the last couple weeks. And so there's, again, a little bit of back and forth to make sure that things are working well. But we will start registering catchments and documenting load reductions in 2015. As such, the performance report that I showed you doesn't have a whole lot to say about those credits. The good news is we do have modeling analysis that shows that the actions that have been done and actions that are happening on the ground right now are on track to achieve the 2016 milestones. That first five-year target, we're on track to achieve that first five-year target. The next performance report, not the next performance report, but the one following the 2016 performance report, will be the first one that will actually include those Lake Clarity Credit Awards and the associated, estimates of lead reduction. Questions? Thoughts? Thank you. We do have a section in the report about featured projects, and again, I just want to highlight some of the things that are going on in the urban environment. There's a lot of great work that has happened, and we've seen some pretty remarkable behavioral change related to the TMDL, even without us having a crediting program, fully working, without us having that immediate regulatory hook. Folks see the writing on the wall, and folks are already making a lot of change. Caltrans has been leading the way with El Dorado County and looking at different traction abrasives. The traction abrasives that they used to apply actually, come to find out, were very high in fine sediment particles. They were shooting themselves in the foot to get you, right? They were putting fine sediment particles on the ground. They've looked at a number of different quarries, looked at a number of different specifications, and are actually zeroing in on a specification that reduces the amount of fine sediment particles in the material that they use in the first place. They're also looking at different ways of applying that material. There are actually electronic distribution devices that can be used that are linked to GPS that help them make sure that they're not over-applying that stuff. And then the sweeper here is a demonstration of the fact that getting it back up off the ground, come to find out, is a really big deal. So we're seeing a lot of that happening already. The other cool thing that we're seeing is a prioritization of where folks are spending their money. The Bijou Erosion Control Project is highlighted here. It's here in South Lake Tahoe. This is a project that has been on the books for a while, but again, it was identified as an area that's a major polluter. It's linking straight to the lake, and there's an opportunity to do something about it. And best of all, it's an opportunity to build a partnership. The partnerships that we're seeing in Lake Tahoe Basin are unprecedented, frankly. This project is a partnership between local homeowners, commercial property owners, businesses in the area, California Department of Transportation runs through the area, as well as the city of South Lake Tahoe and streets within this area, all working together to fund and overall maintain a very complex and effective system for reducing pollutants in Lake Tahoe. So a lot of good stuff happening in the urban. We're seeing a good trajectory there. We have a lot of work to do. And we'll be talking a lot in the future with this board. The permit that is implementing the first 5 years of the TMDL is up in the next couple of years. So we're actually going to start that conversation with our partners and with you as soon as possible, essentially, to start sort of laying the groundwork for what that looks like for the following 5 year target. This performance report primarily focuses on non-urban performance. This is something that we have been criticized about in the past. Again, we spend a lot of our time and energy focusing on the crediting program. And the crediting program is about urban discharges. It is about reducing loads from the urban area. What we hadn't done in the past is actually documented or demonstrated how we were going to track what's happening with our non-urban partners. U.S. Forest Service, California Cow Conservancy, California State Parks, Nevada State Lands, Nevada Department, there's a couple other agencies around that are, again, managing these forested lands. And so through this performance reporting process, what we wanted to do was develop metrics and link back to our implementation plan and, ideally, don't put a whole lot of burden on our partners. These are, Rich did a great job of describing them as sort of implementation agencies. And that's really what we're talking about here. The Forest Service, CTC, these are not dischargers. These are not responsible parties who, have something to do. These are actually partner agencies who are doing good work, and we want to make sure that we're not putting a whole lot on their back. The TRPA Environmental Improvement Program has a process for gathering information about progress in the basin. So we work closely with TRPA. They're in the process of revising their database and their tracking. So we developed six performance metrics that actually align with their performance metrics. We made some minor revisions to get what we needed. And again, we don't have to ask for information twice. Everybody's using the same database. Everybody is getting the same information. Unpaved roads are a big deal in forest wetlands. Unpaved roads and disturbed areas, that's really where we have the opportunity. So that's really where you see the focus of our performance metrics. We're trying to figure out, did you treat those roads? Did you inspect and maintain the roads that are on the ground? The treated includes decommissioning. Did you actually get that road off the landscape completely? And again, there's a performance metric for the acres of area disturbed. These are ski roads, right? And campgrounds and other areas where we just have disturbances that are causing sediment. The last one in forest uplands is partials with stormwater retrofits. Our forest partners do manage trailheads. They do manage some urban-like facilities, whether it is a beachhead or, again, a beach parking lot or a campground. And so they have a responsibility to implement those retrofits, and we want to track and account for that progress and demonstrate that as well. The last one here is stream channel erosion. This one's a bit of a no-brainer. Again, I mentioned stream channel erosion is one of those sources. It is something that is causing pollutants to reach Lake Tahoe. And so we'll be tracking the amount of stream channel that we restored or enhanced within those areas. Again, as with urban, there is a section there that highlights some featured projects. And again, I want to stress there's been some really cool work done in the last few years related to implementation. We're just coming off the crest of a very large funding cycle where we have enjoyed some of the Nevada Public Lands Management Act funds that have funded a lot of great work. So we've seen a lot of really great stream restoration projects. The Angora Fire, they put a great deal of resources, not only from Sentinel but other areas, into making sure that those disturbed lands were restored. Roads and trails, again, a lot of money has been spent here. Looking at the data, it's pretty fantastic. The Forest Service, since 2004, has either treated or otherwise decommissioned more than 200 miles of its unpaved road network. And that's representing more than 80% of their road network. And so again, these are the type of metrics that start to show us that, yeah, there's really good stuff happening, and we're able to see who's doing well on the landscape. So again, a lot of great stuff happening in the non-urban, and this performance report in the future gives us the tools to be able to track that progress and link it directly back to our implementation plan. Okay, so the bottom, if you remember, the bottom portion of that cycle was synthesizing findings and recommending changes. And again, I lump those together on purpose because we lump them together from a process standpoint. We develop a document that we call the Findings and Recommendations Memo. I know Patty is super fond of this title and wants us to make it a little bigger, but it's we're going to do our best to make this. All of these documents are pretty user-friendly, despite perhaps their title. But this is something where we have worked closely with our partners, tried to cast as wide of a net as possible and say, what's been going on in the, again, this one is since 2004, but what we're going to be doing on an annual basis, what happened in the last year? What science? What monitoring? What did you learn from an implementation standpoint? What did you as a homeowner, observe out there with respect to this? And then summarize those findings as best we can into a legible and relatively user-friendly mechanism that leads us to a conclusion of, do we need to make change? Are there things, based on the information that we have learned, that are leading us to some conclusions about the type of adjustments that we need to see in our policy? And that's really the impetus and the desire and findings and recommendations and the findings and recommendations process overall. The next few slides, I can just go over some of the key findings. There's a lot of words on these slides, and I apologize for that, but again, three quick sections. Urban stormwater, three quick items here. Traction abrasives are, there's been some research that has been done that is looking at urban stormwater and looking at traction abrasive material. This isn't a surprise to us, but it's nice to see some validation, right? The data are showing and the research are consistent with the fact that traction abrasives are actually the primary source of what we see for flood sediment particles in urban stormwater. Not only that, in recent years, but we're also seeing that atmospheric PM10, the atmospheric deposition piece that's reaching the lake, traction abrasives are a big part of that pie as well. And again, for those of you who spent time here in the winter, know that if, after a storm you're driving down the road where they apply traction abrasives, it's a lot of dust. It's a lot of dust, and so the traction abrasives are that primary source. Treatment DMPs. What funding agencies require our local government partners or other grantees to maintain their BMPs for 20 years. It's fantastic they're able to sign those agreements so readily, and the reality on the ground we're learning is such that the treatment BMP maintenance probably hasn't been happening as much as it could. The good thing is that the Lake Clarity Credit Program has an element that requires the permittees and the local governments to go out and inspect the BMPs that they say are working. And there's a standardized process for them to do, known as the BMP Rapid Assessment Methodology, that helps guide them to maintenance. And so we are seeing some change in that maintenance, but the research has shown that treatment BMP maintenance is one of those things that's actually ubiquitous across the nation. We haven't seen it. The last thing here is operations and maintenance. Again, we talked a lot about traction abrasives, we talked about sweepers and whatnot. Come to find out, we probably have a bigger opportunity here than we thought when we developed the TMDL. That's my gut on this, and that's the science is showing us that changing the way that we operate our roadways is providing us a pretty big opportunity for achieving load reduction. So, when we look at the curve and you look at the challenges and you look at the difficulties that our partners might have, this is one of those opportunities where actually something kind of fell in their lap a little bit. There's something that they can do. There's something that's relatively cost-effective where they can achieve load reductions at probably a greater rate and at lesser cost than we anticipated. And that has to do with the changing contraction braces, how they apply and things like this. And this gets to infrastructure as well. Streets don't sweep that well if they're cracked. And so we're seeing that a lot of the infrastructure concerns related to street maintenance have always sort of been off the table in the discussion in terms of, well, I need to pave this street. Well, that's not a water quality concern. Actually, it is. Actually, it's something that it is important for you to maintain that infrastructure. So again, these operations and maintenance are an important thing, and that's a key finding that we see. Again, kind of words here. Non-urban, what's going on in the forest? First thing, again, we talked about unpaved roads. Unpaved roads are a big deal, and some of the research that we saw in the last few years has shown us that those unpaved roads indeed are a much greater input of sediment, particularly active roads. So if you're using those roads, then we probably need to be unpaved. Probably need to put in water bars, probably need to inspect and maintain this on a regular basis, as opposed to an active unpaved road might have reached some degree of equilibrium and not completely, not contributing as much sediment. Angora fire, great results out of that. We got lucky, is what it boiled down to. We got lucky from a variety of different reasons. We got lucky because the Forest Service and their teams did a great job of stabilizing our local government partners. The community banded together to make sure that they could do everything they could to make sure that that fire scar did not contribute a lot of sediment and nutrients to the streams and to the lake. We also had a really, really mild fall this spring. And so the area has been able to regenerate. We've seen a lot of good revegetation. And the data are showing that the Angora fire didn't significantly increase the fluids. Third bullet here is forest management practices. This is some cool stuff coming out of the Forest Service. Doug Cushman's in the room, I think. We do a lot of work in Lake Tahoe associated with vegetation management. We have forests that need to be thinned. We have forests that need to be maintained. And as long as we do it well, as long as we implement the DMPs, as long as we follow the regulations, the data are showing that you can actually minimize or eliminate any potential impact associated with that. You can avoid the negative impact of that on the landscape by doing it responsibly. The last point is that restoring floodplain connectivity in geomorphic systems and streams and rivers actually has a great opportunity for us to reduce fine sediment particles. This isn't new to us. This is actually something that we've known from since the TMDL started. Stream channel restoration, a lot of what we're trying to accomplish with stream channel restoration work is to get the stream out of its bed banks. A lot of what's happened over time and a lot of the disturbances caused incision, so the stream just stays in its stream in its channel all the time instead of getting out onto the floodplain. Restoration practices, getting the water back on the floodplain, have always known that there's water quality benefits associated with that. What we're seeing in the last few years is actually numeric modeling tools and monitoring showing us the magnitude of the amount of fine sediment particles you can actually get out onto the floodplain. So we are really seeing that there are substantial FSD load reductions that can result from this connectivity question. Overall, TMDL. Just a few points here, just on the program as a whole. First of all, it's great. Long-term clarity levels seem to have stabilized. This is a great thing to say, and I want to tout it and say that everything's working, but that's also the fact that it just doesn't rain anymore. So most of Lake Tahoe's clarity is with my hydrology, as much as, again, I'd like to say the TMDL program has been abundantly effective. There's also the reality that, again, the hydrology is a big driver here. That said, 2010-11 was not a dry year. We actually had a rather wet winter in 2010-11, and the SECI depth measurements are consistent across both wet years and dry years right now. So that gives us reason for cautious optimism that lake clarity levels have started to stabilize. We are seeing a change in what's happening in clarity. If you were to look at the clarity trend even up into the mid-2000s, it was a linear line. And I used to say all the time, we're losing clarity of a foot per year. It was a linear reduction. And even since, they've done some additional analysis on the data since about 2005, and they're actually starting to see that that is no longer a linear trend. It's actually starting to curve a little bit. We're slowing the rate. And so that's good. We think that we're starting to see something happening there. Monitoring. Everybody wants more monitoring. I'd love more monitoring. Let's do some more monitoring. Let's actually measure it. It costs a lot. It costs a lot of money. We have some really fantastic monitoring programs here in the basin. The Lake Tahoe Interagency Monitoring Program has been monitoring our streams for, in some cases, 40 years. It has also been cut in funding every year for the last 5 years. near shore monitoring is something that we're trying to get ramped up. We don't have the amount of money that we'd like to see for the work that we need to do. Stormwater monitoring, we have one-time grants that are getting us where we need to go right now, but that funding's going to fall off the cliff. So in our analysis, again, you know, the long-term funding, the dedicated revenue streams that we need to actually take those measurements out there on the lake and out there in our streams and out there in our stormwater, we don't see it right now, and that's a problem. The good thing is that measuring FSP is really expensive, but we have found a corollary, and there's been a lot of work done, again, a lot of monitoring that I mentioned, also measures turbidity. Turbidity is a field measurement that you can take with a probe, and there are relationships between turbidity in the water and FSP. And so we are seeing that there are these strong correlations give us an opportunity to have some monitoring savings. We can measure turbidity instead of actually spending all the money for FSP, maybe do some targeted FSP where we need to, but these correlations do give us an opportunity to explore different monitoring options. And the last point here is nearshore conditions. Nearshore is something we've talked about again in the past. We can talk some more about it. I have no doubt that the nearshore will continue to be a conversation for us. The TMDL is reducing fine sediment particles and nutrients reaching the lake. And our assumption, and our, you know, not based on, you know, not totally wild assumption, I guess, is that those improvements are going to improve the nearshore as well, particularly the clarity metrics. Right? Nearshore clarity has been impaired. You see a little bit of murkiness in the water. You know, nutrients are probably impacting some of the algal growth in the nearshore. So the things that we're doing for the TMDL are expected to improve the nearshore. I want to caution that message a bit, that there's a lot to learn about the nearshore. Climate change has influenced Lake Tahoe probably more than a lot of places, and we're seeing changes in the water temperature, obviously seeing changes in the water level right now, the amount of mixing of the lake. See, there's a lot of things going on that are probably influencing the nearshore, and we need to have a better understanding of what those drivers are. I don't want to suggest that the TMDL is the answer. It is part of the solution, but we have more to do with nearshore. So again, we had this synthesis of findings, and synthesis of findings, and those three slides I just gave you led us to a handful of relatively modest suggestions for improvement to the program. The first one here is we want to continue to advocate for funding for our local partners for operations and maintenance. This is a tricky thing for us to do. It is a very challenging thing for us to actually influence the funding streams. At the same time, I think what we want to do is be able to broadcast the message that the science is showing that it has a big benefit. The science is showing that this is an action and an approach that is cost-effective and help support our partners as they look for operations and maintenance funding. The word advocate is strong, and I apologize for that. It's still in this presentation. We're not, again, going out there and otherwise shooting this. It's supporting our partners in their efforts to get this work done. The Lake Clarity Crediting Program Handbook, this is something that, frankly, is an extraordinarily cumbersome and challenging document to use. It provides the processes that our urban partners use. We're actually putting all that stuff on the website. We're actually making it to where they can enter data directly. We're making it to where the databases talk to each other. So we need to improve the guidance, and we need to improve the documentation to reflect the changes that have been made in the tools. Pretty straightforward. This does have implications for this order, at least for our executive officer, in that our monitoring and reporting program in the municipal permits references this document that we're going to be updating. So we need to update that monitoring and reporting program to be consistent with these changes once they occur. We're working on that right now. We talked about floodplain restoration. Again, there's some cool stuff happening with floodplain restoration. There's a lot of resources being invested and a lot of focus on that. Some of our partners have great opportunities to do some great work in floodplain restoration, particularly in the Truckee River. Forest Service is in the middle of a project right now. They've done roughly 4,000 linear feet of new channels to the Upper Truckee River out there, just south of the airport. California Tahoe Conservancy is working on a pretty innovative project to restore some area in the marsh. These have a variety of water quality and habitat benefits that are, you know, again, the environmental benefits are vast. We support these projects wholeheartedly. With respect to the TMDL, we think it's important that we start to better understand the amount of fine sediment particles we're getting out of the floodplain. In the future, we may want to do some additional analysis of what this is, how this is working out in the ledger in terms of our progress. And so we're proposing to develop a new performance metric, and that performance metric will be an aerial extent of floodplain restoration, aerial extent of floodplain connectivity. That way we'll know. That way we'll be tracking this, we'll have some data, and we'll be able to use that data in the future with available tools to get a better understanding of water quality. And the last thing is support vector assessment and monitoring. That's probably soft, actually, with SB 630, which is a recent bill that get grants the water board some resources to do some monitoring. We're sort of in the driver's seat right now, leading an approach to monitor near shore. So we're trying to find the most cost-effective way to gather near shore data. We're also asking some great questions about what data do we need to gather for how long, and really trying to steer some of our academic partners towards these questions of drivers and causal analysis. What's causing the problem, and what, if anything, can we do about it? That's really, really where we'd like a lot of our work to go. And so we're actively working on that. That's something that the TMDO program also continues to do. So the last piece of the pie is a decision record memo. This is something, again, so we've synthesized the findings, made some recommendations, and those recommendations don't happen on their own. What we want to be able to do is share those recommendations. All of these documents are public. And again, I probably haven't said this enough, but all of this process is stakeholder engagement driven and otherwise communication. I can't do the performance report without talking to my stakeholder partners. Right? They're the ones telling us what they've done over time. They're the ones that are providing us that input. Same thing with the findings and recommendations. They're the ones that are helping us understand. And we want to then be able to share with them our recommendations in a public meeting, share those opportunities, and get some feedback from that. Once we get that feedback, we're going to go straight to our executives and have a conversation with them about this is what the data are showing us, this is where the information is leading us, this is what our stakeholders have said. These are the things, these are the pros, these are the cons, and make a recommendation, and then essentially document that exercise through this decision record. This is sort of what the
recommendation,
pardon me, is saying we should do. And so again, it's just a formal document. It's relatively quick. We're going to release it in November, and it's going to capture the adjustment recommendations that ultimately our executive partners are making with respect to that. As I indicated, this is something that is not done in a vacuum. We are ensuring that our stakeholder feedback is considered. We actually, again, want to float this stuff out there before we make these decisions and make sure that we have an opportunity to account for what they have to say. And it's circulated. It's something that we put out there and make sure folks are available. And it's posted to the TMDL online interface. TMDL online interface means nothing to you yet, but I'll talk about it in a minute. Stakeholders. I'll beat this horse a little bit more. Again, this is something, this entire process has been developed with stakeholder feedback, engaged with our partners, engaged with the community, making sure that we have heard, does this make sense? And then within the process itself, we have defined and very clear and explicit opportunities for our stakeholders to be involved. There's a form. And I know that sounds perfunctory, but there's an online form, essentially, that folks can provide their written feedback of what we think either is happening to the TMDL, what we don't like about the TMDL, what kind of changes we want to see. And then we gather all that information and compile that into that findings and recommendations memo. As an appendix to our findings and recommendations memo, there's this feedback capture sheet. And that feedback capture sheet basically summarizes what we heard and provides actually a response from my partner Nevada and I. We heard you. We're making a change. We understand this is a desire that you would like to see. Resources are not available. These are the kind of things that we want to be able to always document. And again, circulate to our partners so they have an opportunity to provide some feedback on that. And again, I mentioned a meeting. In October every year, we're going to share those findings and recommendations and performance report with our partners. Here's what's been going on, here's what we see, here are the recommendations, and get that feedback and use that feedback to help guide the decisions that we need to make in the future. Online interface, I promise to be up there. We have developed a website. It's pretty fancy. It is called the TMDL Online Interface. The address is there at the bottom. I'm happy to send a link or otherwise help folks find this website. The TMDL Online Interface really is a clearinghouse for all Lake Tahoe TMDL information. We wanted to separate this from the state website in that it is a bi-state program. This is something, again, that Nevada and I do together. They had a website. We had a website. We felt it was important for us to have a unified place where we could go that was relatively user-friendly, provide documentation. Everything that we have from the performance reports, we put onto a very cool results section of this website where you can sort by property owner, you can sort by performance metric, you can sort by year. You can actually look at the performance information in a variety of different ways. All the information from the Lake Clarity Crediting Program will be updated here. So you'll be able to look on a map, click on Caltrans, see what they did in 2014, look at how many credits they generated, have a way for the public and our partners to be able to interface with the program directly. And again, for us, a way for us to communicate directly with those folks. This website is very easy to use. It's one of those, I'm able to edit it myself. I have a login screen, so I can make changes. I can upload documents. So Jason and I can be rather nimble about this engagement tool and make sure that we are responsive to concerns and making sure the information is getting out there. So if you get a chance to check it out, we're pretty happy with it, and it does provide, again, a really nice summary of a lot of the things that we've done. I'm going to leave you with this slide. At the 2011 Federal Summit, the governors of California, Nevada, Governor Brown, Governor Sandoval, and then EPA, Jared, what's his last name? Blumenthal. They all signed a declaration approving the Lake Tahoe TMDL, and they set three targets within that resolution that they were going to resolve, to take issues, take steps to implement the Lake Tahoe TMDL. It's unclear to me why they chose three targets, and I'm not sure where the third one came from. We talked about the clarity challenge at this end of that AEB. We talked about the target itself. There's actually a target there for 2015? 2017. The conference is being left to three participants at this time. Oh. If you would like. Don't go anywhere. I'm almost done. It's 2017. No, for 2017, the it says that we're going to achieve a clarity of 70.2 feet. We're almost there, which is cool. Again, we talked a little bit about clarity. I'm happy to say that we are starting to see a knee in the curve. Don't pay too much close attention to these data. They're synthetic data. It's just for illustration purposes. But 2013 average was 70.1. We'll be getting the 2014 average probably in the coming weeks. Our friends at UC Davis generally roll that out in the spring. But the data are looking good. Clarity is coming, starting to improve, and so I think that we can say with some confidence that we're on the right track. And more importantly, we have a very robust and defined program for changing and tracking and administering the program over time. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions?
I have a question. So in January, we heard about potential impacts to the lake from climate change, and I'm wondering how any of that might affect meeting our clarity objective.
It does. Yeah, I mean, the big deal with climate change and the big concern that we have with climate change has to do with thermal stratification. So thermal stratification is layering of the lake. In the summer, the lake gets warm, and it forms a nice warm layer. And then generally, every year, every other year, we get cold winters. The cold winters cool the top waters, we get a lot of wind, and those cold waters dive, and the wind stirs things up, and we get circulation of the lake. And the lake circulates all the way to the bottom, 1,600 feet. So we get circulation top to bottom, and that circulation is very important for maintaining the dissolved oxygen deep in the waters. Dissolved oxygen is important because it basically keeps the reserved nutrients. There's a big store of phosphorus, essentially, in the sediments that will remain there as long as the dissolved oxygen is sufficient. If the dissolved oxygen is reduced, if the dissolved oxygen starts to approach zero, if we get anoxic conditions, the phosphorus will, the chemical reactions will be such that the phosphorus will be released. And so that cycling is important for maintaining that dissolved oxygen, and without that cycling, we have a potential problem. We have a potential big release of nutrients, and that big release of nutrients is likely to feed primary productivity, it's likely to feed neutrality, it's likely to feed a bunch of stuff that might influence what we think is happening. All the way around. Lake Tahoe hasn't mixed for the last 2 years, and that is not common to have 2 years in a row like that. It's not unprecedented. It has happened, and I haven't seen the data from this last year. But we haven't had a particularly cold winter. We did have some big wind events, whether those wind events were sufficient or not. But as I understand it, the temperature is important. Again, the cold water diving is important. So climate change is again one of those things that is influencing everything. And because of that, there are factors in the lake that are beyond our control that might have an issue. It raises the question, then, what do we do about that? Can we maintain oxygen? Is it a species code? I don't know. These are interesting questions that, again, through the TMDL management system effort and through our process, we can start to kind of put that in the hopper, prioritize it, decide if that's where we want to spend money, identify funds, and sort of use the process to help guide that. Yeah, climate change is one of those unknowns. Again, the folks at UC Davis have been tracking climate change at Lake Tahoe for some time and present on this all the time. And they've shown that the lake has increased in temperature. They have shown that climate change is already starting to influence what happens here at the lake. Lake level right now is quite low. I don't know the number, but I mean, I saw as low as 6218 at one point, and at the high lake level 6231. So that's low, right? And we're really a long way to go. So I think the dam itself is at 6223.
Is that
right?
The
dam?
Yes, the.
Yeah, natural
river. Bottom of the dam is 23.
Yeah, 6223. So we need to get to 6223 before water even spills into the lower Truckee River. So again, climate change stuff, arguably. I'm not a climate specialist, but I tend to agree that this type of drought and this type of winter we're seeing is likely due to some of the changes we're seeing. Any other questions?
No other questions.
I don't know what I need to do. Or you guys.
Well, you answered all the questions.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Presentation.
Thank you.
So
I appreciate your time. It's been a privilege to chat with you. I can't wait till next time. Thanks.
Nothing further. We are adjourned.